Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The situation in Shifa Hospital now are very critical. Nothing happened like this before. There is direct targeting of the hospital buildings. So our colleagues there, they barely communicate with the outside community.
Gaza's two largest hospitals are no longer functioning. As hospitals as they run out of fuel and are surrounded by Israeli forces. Doctors at Al-Shifa Hospital are desperately trying to keep alive over 30 premature babies after six babies die due to the power outage. We'll speak to a pediatric intensive care physician who works with the humanitarian aid organization Médecins Sans Frontières. That's Doctors Without Borders. Then we remember the Palestinian doctor Hamam Alov, who was killed Saturday when an Israeli artillery shell struck his wife's home, killing him, his father, his brother-in-law, and his father-in-law. The doctor spoke to Democracy Now! 2 weeks ago about why he continued to risk his life to help patients in Gaza.
You think I went to medical school and for my postgraduate degrees for a total of 14 years, so I think only about my life. And not my patients.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Gaza's two largest hospitals, Al-Shifa and Al-Quds, have closed as Gaza's health system collapses under relentless Israeli bombardment and blockades. At least six premature babies and nine other patients have died at Al-Shifa due to the shortages of electricity. Photos show premature babies removed from their incubators, placed together on a bed for warmth as the last remaining hospital workers are forced to resort to desperate measures. Medical staff say Israeli forces have entered hospitals and fired at patients and forced hundreds of others onto the streets. Doctors and officials with the Palestinian Ministry of Health pleaded with international actors to allow for the safe evacuation and treatment of patients. Dr. Mohammed Kandil directs the emergency department at Al-Shifa.
Hospital under fires. The last example is Shifa Hospital ICU. There is another private obstetric hospital was targeted directly today. And two of our colleagues who are specialists in obstetric and gynecology were killed tonight. There is no service for pediatric patients in the northern area. Five kids in the pediatric ICU left alone in Rantisi Hospital, and we don't know what's going on with them. The communication were lost, so they might be dead or alive. So now in Shifa Hospital, they cannot deal with the dead bodies. There is a tenth of dead bodies back in the hospital.
Nearly 200 medical workers have been reported killed since October 7th. Among the dead is Al-Shifa's Dr. Hamam Alov, whose family home was shelled by Israel. We spoke to Dr. Alov less than 2 weeks ago. Later in the broadcast, we'll play that whole interview. In Geneva, UN staff observed a minute of silence today in memory of the 101 employees of the UN's Palestinian Refugee Agency, known as UNRWA, who've been killed in Israel's assault on Gaza. Palestinian health officials say it's impossible to determine an updated death toll due to communications outages, but said on Sunday at least 11,100 people have been killed since the start of the conflict, including 8,000 children and women. On Friday, Israel's foreign ministry lowered its official death toll from Hamas's October 7th attack in Israel to 1,200 people, down from 1,400. Mass displacement continues as Gazans continue to flee southwards, despite Israeli attacks also targeting southern cities like Khan Yunis, where another 13 people were killed in an Israeli airstrike. This is a displaced Palestinian.
Nowhere is safe in Gaza. My son was injured and there was not a single hospital I could take him to so he could get stitches. There is no water. There isn't enough salt water we can wash our hands with. There is no water for ablution. There are bodies filling Gaza streets. And there are still people there hoping that it will be solved soon. But only God knows if it will be solved, if they will live, or if they will die. We were forced to leave. It wasn't up to us. The whole world has let us down. The progressive world that boasts about human rights has let us down.
The White House says it's in active consultations with Israel's military over fighting in and around hospitals. On Friday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said far too many Palestinians have been killed in Gaza, but the U.S. has yet to call for a ceasefire or reconsider any of its unconditional military aid to Israel. The French president, Emmanuel Macron, called on Israel to stop killing women, babies and elderly people in Gaza, and for the first time since the assault started, called for a ceasefire.
I think this is the only solution we have, this ceasefire, because it's impossible to explain. We want to fight against terrorism by killing innocent people.
President Macron said he hoped other countries, including the U.S. and the U.K., would join in the call for a ceasefire. France last month banned Palestinian solidarity protests. In Britain, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak fired hard-right Home Secretary Suella Braverman after she called protests for Palestinian rights hate marches and published an op-ed last week accusing London police force of using double standards in dealing with protesters against the war. Braverman was accused of fomenting right-wing hatred. In a surprising move, British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has brought back former Prime Minister David Cameron to act as Foreign Secretary amidst a wider cabinet reshuffle. Mary Lou McDonald, the head of Sinn Féin, is calling on Irish and European leaders to take action against Israel's assault on Gaza.
Where is the protection of international law for every child killed in Gaza, for every Gazan mother holding the cold body of their dead child? Israel cannot be allowed to commit atrocities with impunity. The government says that Israel's actions cannot be without consequences. I agree. That is why the Irish government must take the lead and refer Israel to the International Criminal Court and send the Israeli ambassador home.
Mary Lou McDonald spoke at Sinn Féin's annual conference where Palestinian ambassador to Ireland, Dr. Jilan Waba Abdelmajid, also spoke and was met with a standing ovation. Meanwhile, massive demonstrations continue to fill streets around the world demanding a ceasefire and an end to Israel's siege on Gaza. Up to 300,000 people marched in London over the weekend. Around 80 were arrested. Protests also continued here in the United States, including a series of family-centered protests. Children accompanied family members to march to the homes of President Biden in Delaware and New York Senator Chuck Schumer here in New York. Israel's military says 7 soldiers and 10 other people were injured Sunday in a rocket attack by Hezbollah fighters from southern Lebanon. It was the worst cross-border violence between Israel and Lebanon since an Israeli airstrike a week prior killed a Lebanese woman and 3 children. On Sunday, Israel's Minister of Defense, Yoav Gallant, warned Hezbollah against further attacks on Israel, adding, quote, "What we are doing in Gaza, we can do in Beirut," unquote. The Pentagon says U.S. warplanes have carried out 2 more airstrikes in Syria in response to dozens of drone and missile attacks on bases housing Pentagon forces in Syria and Iraq that have injured at least 56 military personnel. Reuters reports one of the U.S. strikes targeted a camp run by pro-Iranian armed groups in Deir al-Zor province. Another struck near a bridge close to the city of Mayadin, close to the Iraqi border. It's at least the third round of U.S. airstrikes in Syria in just over 2 weeks. In Sudan, human rights groups say members of the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary group carried out a massacre of around 1,300 Masalit people over 3 days earlier this month in Sudan's West Darfur region. About 2,000 people were injured in the attacks, and at least 300 others remain missing. Survivors of the massacre say RSF fighters went from house to house looking for men, killing each one they found. On Friday, the United Nations warned more than 6 million people have fled their homes in Sudan since fighting between rival military factions erupted in April. About 25 million people, or more than half Sudan's population, is reliant on aid. This is the UN's humanitarian coordinator for Sudan.
Running out of words to describe the horror of what is happening in Sudan. We continue to receive unrelenting and appalling reports of sexual and gender-based violence, enforced disappearance, arbitrary detentions, and grave violations of human and children's rights. What is happening is verging on pure evil.
In Spain, major protests rocked Madrid and other cities over the weekend after acting Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez agreed to grant amnesty to leaders of the Catalan separatist group Junts in exchange for their support to form a new government, which would secure another term for Sanchez as Spain's leader. Carles Puigdemont, head of Junts, has been exiled in Brussels since he and others were convicted over Catalonia's attempt to secede from Spain in 2017. The proposed amnesty deal would allow separatist leaders to run for office. Sanchez's conservative opponents have slammed the deal and urged their supporters to take to the streets. Sanchez and his Socialist Workers' Party formed a coalition with the leftist Sumar Alliance last month and made a series of progressive pledges. Australia has signed an agreement with Tuvalu, allowing citizens of the low-lying Pacific Island nation to take up residency in Australia, should rising sea levels force them to abandon their homes. About 11,000 residents of Tuvalu are among the world's most vulnerable to the effects of the climate crisis. In return for offering them residency, Australia will have effective veto power over Tuvalu's security arrangements with any other country. Australia's Foreign Minister Penny Wong acknowledged the deal was aimed at countering China's influence in the Asia Pacific.
We recognise we live in a more contested region and we have to work harder to be a partner of choice. We know that. And unlike the previous government, we have been doing the work and we will do the work to work with the Pacific Island Forum members to assure Australia's presence as a member of the family and as a partner of choice.
FBI agents seized the electronic devices from New York City Mayor Eric Adams last week as part of an investigation into whether his 2021 campaign received illegal donations from Turkey. Adams' two cell phones and iPad were returned days later. The seizure came in the wake of a federal raid on the home of Adams' chief campaign fundraiser. The alleged donation scheme is believed to involve foreign businesses who use Turkish-American citizens as straw donors to funnel money into Eric Adams' mayoral campaign. Federal investigators are also said to be looking into whether Adams, shortly before he was elected mayor, pressured the New York Fire Department into approving occupancy of a new Turkish consulate in Manhattan, despite safety concerns with the high-rise building. Adams reportedly pushed to open the building in time for a planned visit by the Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to New York to attend the 2021 UN General Assembly. South Carolina Senator Tim Scott announced he's dropping out of the 2024 presidential race. Scott, the only Black Republican U.S. senator, did not immediately endorse another candidate. Just 2 months out from the first nominating contest in Iowa, Donald Trump remains the Republican Party's clear frontrunner, despite his myriad legal troubles. And in California, a jury has found the animal rights activist and attorney Wayne Chung guilty of three charges, including felony conspiracy to trespass after he led direct action protests in 2018 and 19 that rescued ducks and chickens from factory farms in Sonoma County. Chung faces up to 3.5 years at a sentencing hearing scheduled for November 30th. He spoke to Democracy Now! After his arrest in 2019.
If you or I tortured an individual dog, we would clearly be subject to the criminal laws of the state of California. Yet when a factory farm does this on massive scale, on a scale a million times larger than an individual person abusing a single animal, it's seen as industry standard and therefore completely immune from prosecution.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, we speak to a pediatric intensive care physician with Doctors Without Borders about how Gaza's two largest hospitals are no longer functioning. Back in a minute.
Child will know what you haven't told. His present will be past. He'll ride the time to another state of mind. That won't last, 'cause he'll grow and die. And they would set him free, yet I shouted, these children are I. The child will grow and fall and crawl until he would not feel. Upon them purple gods and these 10 almost tears, I let die set the fire on those kitchen's walls, yet I shouted, these children are my fault. Yet I whispered, these children aren't my fault.
The Children Are I by Nasha Rajas. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Gaza's two largest hospitals, Al-Shifa and Al-Quds, have stopped functioning as Gaza's health system collapses under relentless Israeli bombardment and blockades. On Saturday, Al-Shifa Hospital ran out of fuel, forcing doctors to remove dozens of premature babies from incubators. Six preemies have already died. Doctors are struggling to keep more than 30 other babies alive. Palestinian health officials have accused Israel of using snipers to shoot at people inside the hospital complex where thousands of displaced Palestinians have sought refuge. Israel's claimed Hamas runs a command center below the hospital. Hamas and medical officials at the hospital have denied the claim. On Sunday, Dr. Mohammed Obaid, a surgeon with Doctors Without Borders, described the dire situation inside the hospital.
The situation now is very bad. We don't have connection. There is no internet. Sometimes we have some reason on the call phone. We're on the fourth floor. And also there's a sniper who attacked four patients from the inside the hospital. One of them has a gunshot directly in his neck, and he has a quadriplegia. And the other one, he has a gunshot in the abdomen. Some of the people which actually go outside the hospital, they want to go to the south, they bump them also. They bump the family from the Shifa hospital today in the morning. There is no electricity, actually. There is no water. There is no food. So our team is exhausted. We have two neonate patients die, actually, because the incubator, it's not working because there is no electricity. Also, we have the adult patient in the ICU. He died because the ventilator is shut down because there is no electricity. We can see, actually, the smoking, the smoke around the hospital. They hit everything around the hospital, and they hit the hospital many times.
That was Dr. Mohammed Obaid, a surgeon with MSF, Doctors Without Borders, inside the Al-Shifa Hospital. On Sunday, Democracy Now! Reached another doctor in Gaza City, Dr. Fadel Naim.
We are at Al-Ahli Arab Hospital, the Baptist Hospital, are the only functioning hospital in the Gaza City. All the injured people and other people, like people with hypertension or diabetes mellitus or diarrhea or asthma or children with dehydration, cancer patients, patients with kidney failure who need dialysis, pregnant women and other cases are coming to our hospital because they have no other possibility to go to other hospitals. The other hospitals are surrounded by the Israeli tankers, like the biggest hospital in Gaza, Shifa Hospital, and Nasser Pediatric Hospital. Some of the NGO hospitals are closed because of the shortage in fuel and equipment. Since yesterday, we received more than 300 to 400 injured people and tens of other people who had other health problems. We had to do some surgical interventions in the corridors and on the courtyard because of the shortage of anesthesia drugs. Our biggest problem is the shortage in manpower because we are a small hospital. We are not prepared to receive such like these numbers of patients at one time. Many volunteers came to help us, but we need specialized doctors in different specialties, in general surgery, in neurosurgery, chest surgery, vascular surgery, and gynecology, in pediatricians. Unfortunately, we couldn't help many of these patients. Some of them died because we couldn't do anything for them.
That was Dr. Fadel Naeem speaking Sunday from Al Ahli Al Arabi Hospital in Gaza City. To talk more about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, we're joined by Dr. Tanya Hajj-Hassan. She's a pediatric intensive care physician who works with the humanitarian aid organization Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF, or Doctors Without Borders. She's in regular contact with health professionals in Gaza and previously worked as a medical trainer in Gaza and the West Bank. She's the co-founder of the social media account Gaza Medic Voices, which shares firsthand accounts from healthcare professionals in Gaza. On Saturday, she took part in a vigil outside British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's office in London. She broke down while reading an urgent message from the director of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, Dr. Nidal Hadrous.
We, as medical staff, want to leave, but we cannot. We might not survive until the morning.
Dr. Hajj-Hassan breaks down as she tries to read a statement from the doctor in Gaza. She sits down. She covers her eyes. Her colleagues also in blue hospital gear put their arms on her.
We might not survive till the morning. We don't want to be killed here. Just only because we remain committed to our patients and our medical profession. I am calling for help urgently. Please do whatever you can through your government or the ICRC, the Red Cross, to arrange a safe corridor for the medical staff. Please treat this as top urgent. This is the director of the major trauma hospital in Gaza. I'm going to leave you with one more message. To bomb a hospital means to terrify sleeping patients, to break windows over their heads, to make the walls tip onto their bodies, to rip out ventilators and burn oxygen tanks, to ruin equipment that can help human millions of times.
That was Dr. Tanya Hajj-Hassan, pediatric intensive care physician who works with the humanitarian aid group Doctors Without Borders, reading an urgent message from the director of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, Dr. Nidal Hadrous. Dr. Hashasan, thank you so much for joining us. You must be, to say the least, beyond exhausted. You were reading that statement in London. I last saw you in Jordan, and now you're in Toronto, Canada. Can you talk about the latest? That was Saturday. This is now 2 days later.
Yeah. Just to be clear, you know, this was a vigil with multiple healthcare providers present who have been working in the Gaza Strip for over a decade. And we're all in tears. I mean, every day we feel like we've reached the worst. And I'm going to quote one of my colleagues in Gaza, a young female surgeon, who said, every day we think that we've reached the worst thing that could ever happen, and it's impossible that the world will be silent to it, and it will definitely get better. And we finally reach the end. And then the next day it proves that there's something even worse. And I share that sentiment. We have descended into a very dark era for humanity. Let me just paint a picture for you of the conditions as far as I know them right now at El Shifa Hospital. I'd been receiving updates up until about an hour and a half ago. It's very difficult to receive updates. As you know, communication has been cut off, so they're intermittent. There's certain individuals who have intermittent connection. El Shifa Hospital is the largest trauma hospital in Gaza. It is under complete siege. It has been come under a direct attack by Israeli forces for over a week now. The medical staff, including Médecins Sans Frontières, MSF staff, are physically in the hospital at the moment. There are patients there in critical condition, hundreds of patients, and there are thousands of internally displaced individuals who are still inside that hospital, completely under siege, surrounded by Israeli tanks. They have no access to food. They're surviving on minimal dates and biscuits that are left in the hospital. They have no access to water. They describe being very thirsty. And as you know, they have no access to electricity. After the fuel supply was cut off, the electricity supply was cut off, and more recently, the solar panels were bombed. They describe over 100 bodies lying on the ground, decomposing, dead bodies that they cannot bury. This is after having to dig mass graves in the garden of the hospital. The morgues cannot be cooled to preserve the bodies. As you know, there's no electricity. So they're decomposing. The intensive care unit was targeted twice in the last 24 hours. There are 28 patients there. Two of them have passed away over the course of the evening. These are the adult patients. They have no access to oxygen. Dialysis patients who require electricity to run the dialysis machines because they have kidney failure do not have access to those dialysis machines. I can describe to you in detail what death will look like for these patients. Toxins will develop in their bloodstream. They will become overloaded with fluid because they cannot pee it out. They cannot pee the toxins out either. They will feel very unwell. They will probably get very confused. They'll have difficulty breathing, and eventually they'll die. This is a slow, horrible, painful death, preventable, painful death, like all the deaths in Gaza. Anyone who moved inside the hospital is getting directly killed. Two nurses were killed by snipers in the last 24 hours. Anyone who tries to leave the hospital is targeted. You mentioned the 38 premature newborns, three of whom who've died are currently outside of their incubators at risk of hypothermia without access to oxygen, and I'm not sure how they're going to provide them with all the things they need, including food. This is an entire hospital that's completely cut off, and we've had very little to no news from the other hospitals in the north of Gaza. Last we heard, they're completely surrounded, like El Shifa Hospital. And, you know, we're in a situation where there has been a systematic attempt to destroy civilian Palestinian livelihood and existence in all of Gaza, not just the north. 30% of the killed have been in the south of Gaza, which is supposed to be the safe zone. Humanitarian corridors, or so-called humanitarian corridors, are called the corridor of death by Gazans because they get directly targeted as they're trying to flee on these corridors. You know, Doctors Without Borders, and I mentioned we're really struggling to contact a lot of the staff. One of my colleagues who I know at El Shifa said, we are sure we are alone now. No one hears us. We are alone. MSF was established, one of the main principles of MSF's establishment by journalists and doctors decades ago, was to provide testimony, this concept of témoignage, which means bearing witness, to provide testimony, to bear witness on these sorts of atrocities that we don't, that are not exposed, and to relieve the suffering of those who experience them. And we're in a situation where we can't do either of those things. One of our MSF staff who is staying in Gaza City, but not physically in the hospital at the moment, said there are dead people on the streets. I'm going to read his quote. There are dead people on the streets. We see people being shot at. We can see injured people. We can hear them crying for help. But we cannot do anything. It is too dangerous to go outside. Ambulances cannot reach the wounded. You mentioned Dr. Hammam Alul earlier, who was on your program a couple days ago, describing how he had refused to leave the hospital and desert his patients. I knew Dr. Hammam. He was a beacon of light.